Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Great. Glad Joshy can come, Shira chirped into the phone. Good. See you Tuesday. Good grief. Shira hung up the phone and turned to her friend Karen. 4 kids are coming to the playgroup. Now what? Well, began Karen, when I volunteered at the kids' preschool, they handled things pretty well. But they were professionals, Shira interrupted. They at least knew what they were doing. Yeah, but it was kind of pretty basic stuff, Karen explained. They mainly went with what the kids that age like to do. You mean like take each other's toys and run around? Shira was beginning to feel her stomach tighten. No, silly. Karen took her friend by the shoulders. You have a preschooler. You know what they like to do. Play with water, play with sand, find bugs, dress up, and then it's snack time and you're done. Maybe you could come take my place Tuesday, Shira responded. I'm going to have a headache. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about children's playgroups? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited Parents' Perspective before. She's an expert when it comes to playgroups for kids. Dr. Renee Hackney owns and teaches at Parenting Playgroups, a parent resource center serving the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. She was originally a full-time preschool teacher, holding graduate degrees in school and developmental psychology. Dr. Hackney is the mother of 7 and 10-year-old daughters. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Hackney.
Thank you very much.
So, hosting a playgroup turns out to be an effort for parents, and we're wondering, is it worth the trouble?
I think hosting playgroups is definitely worth the trouble. Play is children's number one job from 2 until about 6 years old, and there are so many potential benefits of hosting play in your home with other children. I think young children learn a great many social concepts through playgroups. It is one thing to lecture to children about turn-taking and about sharing, but when they actually have to do it, when they actually get to practice it, they really learn and they really acquire those skills. There's also children with more social opportunities. They tend to be more socially competent as they enter school. And so the idea is the more social opportunities children can have in the preschool years, the better off they're going to be, the better their social skills as they get to school age. The early friendships, it's suggested that 2 through about 6 years old, kids need repeated play with the same children to actually build friendships. If you just have random play with different kids in the neighborhood on different days, they may not see kids often enough to build relationships over time. And so the idea is a playgroup gives you that. If you've got a playgroup that meets every other week and it's the same group of kids, they can gradually build friendships and really get to know each other. There's also benefits for the parents. There's lots of benefits. Getting to know your neighbors, getting to know other moms with children in the same age ranges, so you can talk about some of those questions that parents may have.
The reality checks that we all need.
They are definite reality checks.
How should we go about organizing a home playgroup? That seems like a very big project.
It does. I tend to think first of the group size and the mix of kids. How many children you think is appropriate for the amount of space you have or for the age of the children. And thinking about what children might make good friends for your child. If they're a really active physical kid, are there kids in the neighborhood that tend to like those same kind of things? So thinking about the mix of kids and how many. It's also thinking about the ground rules. What is going to be the role of the parents? What are their responsibilities when they host at their house versus when they're a guest at someone else's house? How they're going to manage discipline? Because things are going to come up. If you've got 6 kids playing in a room, they're going to pinch and pull at each other. And so what to do about discipline, what to do about squabbles over toys, and kind of getting an understanding between all the parents involved. I also think about laying out the structure of the play date itself. Are you going to do more unstructured playtime, more structured activities like arts and crafts? Is there going to be downtime for the kids? How much supervision are you going to have? There's some playgroups that I've been to where the moms are all off in the kitchen having coffee while the kids are down the hall in the playroom. And it's kind of a free-for-all in the playroom.
Yeah.
But it's knowing going in what you want that setup to be.
So would you say that the moms, or in some cases the moms and dads who are going to be running the playgroup, should get together and go over some of these issues beforehand?
I think that's a really good idea, especially if it's going to be a group that meets regularly, because things will come up. These questions will come up, and it's all the better to have a good understanding of the group before you get started.
I remember a play group with my oldest son. At one time, there was one child who was less articulate, and so he bit He would grab the finger of the other child and bite because he couldn't say, I don't like that, I don't want that. He hadn't learned to use his words for that. And that mother and the rest of us had to talk about what should we do. So we did something consistent for him. And then he would go over, if he did have to go through any form of discipline, afterwards he would go over to the window and just look for his mommy.
Oh, sadly. Yeah. I think it's also okay to think about this as a work in progress. While you lay the best foundation and you make the best rules and regulations and what you're going to expect from it, it is a work in progress. It likely will change as people come in and out of the neighborhood or in and out of the group. So it's knowing that it's okay to go back and readdress when issues come up.
What would you say is the most important thing for parents to remember about playgroups at home?
That things don't always go perfectly well and that it's okay. There are going to be bumps in the road. A preschool teacher recently explained that when a parent comes to her with a complaint about something that happened to their child in school, she turns it right around by saying, wow, what a great opportunity. Do you know, so if the parent comes in and says, my child got pushed today and I want to be sure that this doesn't happen again, the teacher will say, well, isn't this a wonderful opportunity to teach her an assertive voice, to get her to stand up for herself? Yeah. Or isn't this a wonderful opportunity to learn social problems solving and what can we do better tomorrow? And so it's kind of taking all of those bumps in the road and thinking, where are we going to go from here? And that every bump in the road is an opportunity. So if you get a child who on a certain day is really, really angry, thinking about it as an opportunity to teach that child how to calm or how to get along better, you know, building those social skills through the playgroup activities. Or if a child is aggressive, like your biter, thinking of it as an opportunity for the others to practice assertive voice or for that child to practice his language in those moments. And so kind of going at it as we're going to address the bumps in the road rather than panic from them.
But that means that we as parents all have a little bit that we have to work on learning in order to handle not only our own child, but other people's children.
Oh, sure. And I think you kind of take that responsibility when you invite six kids over to your house with their parents that you're going to have some of those conversations.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion with Dr. Renee Hackney.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Renee Hackney about children's playgroups at home. Speaking of numbers, how many kids is a good number to compose a playgroup with?
Well, I think by age, it's best to think about how old the children are. And so if you've got a group of 2 and 3-year-old children, 4 to 6 kids is probably plenty. And you might start with 4 just to begin with because they're really little. 2 is just a play date. 2 children is just me and my friend together. And there really aren't a lot of social dynamics happening there. 3 is a hard number. So I would avoid 3 because someone is going to get left out. So 4 would be a minimum. And then 4 to 6 is probably plenty for the little guys. As they get a little older, as they get to be 4 to 6 years old, you could broaden it. I've seen play groups go very well with 8 or 10 kids at a time with the older kids. They tend to break off into smaller groups, play with groups of 2 or 3 within, but it gives the kids some choices, and it allows them to play with different children on different days.
The only thing is when I'm hearing the numbers increase, I'm thinking maybe there should be more than one parent. What is your recommendation about that?
Likely there should be more than one parent with that
no
number
matter
of
what.
Kids. I tend to think with the 2 and 3-year-olds that parents are just a part of playgroups, that they should stay. I tend to think one parent per child, so that if you're signing up and going to playgroups or going to someone's house, that 2 or 3 years old, likely there's a need for parents to stay with children. By 4 to 6 years old, I would think you could start dropping off children, but I would still want at least one parent to maybe every 3 or 4 kids, just so they don't get too outnumbered.
Okay. What about the idea of ages? Is it better to have everybody all one age, or is it good to have some differences in ages?
There's kind of 2 answers there. The first answer would be it's nice to have everybody the same age because likely their interests are the same, their language may be about at the same level, their play skills may be at about the same level. But there's definitely the other side where Montessori schools say it's better to mix kids, and it's better to have kids 2 through 5 in a classroom or 4 through 7 in a classroom. You get a different type of social dynamics happening. The younger kids get to learn from the older kids. The older kids get to practice some leadership roles. And so it's really thinking about what the benefits are to either.
It's interesting. Last week I had visitors. 2 of my grandchildren were visiting with their parents. And one afternoon I was busy, and the little girl who's almost four and the little boy who's almost two played together for over an hour, mm-hmm. very quietly. She's into make-believe. He's into anything my sister thinks is good is great, so I'll do it. And they were playing in the room right adjacent to the kitchen where I was. I loved it, mm-hmm. but this was a two-year age difference. They played beautifully for that whole time. Occasionally, he would bring me a little plastic cup and say, I brought you your coffee. Oh. What's in my coffee? I asked him at one time. He said, orange juice, which wasn't what I expected. But it was very interesting to me to see the age difference. Very happy together. There was no battling. There was no hair pulling. Nothing that goes on between siblings at other times.
Right. And it is lovely to see children play together at different ages and to see the dynamics of what happens as a result. Those friendships tend not to be as long-lasting. And so if you're thinking of play over the course of the next several years, if you've moved into a neighborhood where you think you're planning to stay, children who are same age and same sex, their friendships tend to last longer. Mm-hmm. It's not that that wasn't a lovely friendship, and it could be a lasting friendship. But it tends to be that kids that you have more in common with, you tend to stay friends longer.
Does a play area for a play group need to be organized in some way? The first time I ever did a play group with a friend, she was a former nursery school teacher. Mm. Her entire rec room was set up with centers.
Yeah.
Wait till she comes to my house. It doesn't look like this.
Right. I don't think it has to be anything as fancy as that, which I'm sure was a nice way to have a play date. One thing I think, though, is that you need to be sure you have enough elbow room. Children need enough room to be able to spread out their toys. They need enough room to be able to, if they're going to color at the table, to spread out the crayons and to spread out the coloring books. And so that may be something that would either limit the number of kids you have or just to think about how to arrange the space, depending on the activities that they're going to be doing. I also tend to think the more well-organized, the better. Not that one system of organization is better than another, but kids should see where the toys are or have a place to put things away after so that it maintains a little bit of
consistency.
Yeah, consistency. I was going to say not chaos.
Order.
Order. A sense of order throughout. And if you're thinking of having structured versus unstructured activities, if you're going to have structured activities, being sure to plan and organize those ahead of time. I know at some of our play dates, we cook in the kitchen. And if you're missing an ingredient halfway through, your activity is done for. So it's thinking about the organization of any planned activities that you have.
The other thing that I always remember when my kids had little kids coming over when they were really preschool and very young, I was thinking there's always the issue of sharing, not well. Sure. And so I remember going through with my kids, what toys do you not want anyone to play with, and put those away.
Right. I think that's a fabulous idea. For the host child to be able to protect some of his things or her things, going through and saying, are there things that we're not ready to share? Let's put those up. Let's put them someplace safe. One, so that child has a sense of ownership. Their things are protected. But two, you might get around some of those later battles. Just avoid them altogether. And then easily, if the sharing difficulties still happen, you can say, well, remember, we did put some of those toys away. Do you know the things that are out are for everyone? And so you're kind of laying that as a ground rule as well.
Is there an optimum time frame for a preschool playgroup to follow? In other words, how long should it last? How long should people spend on different things? When you're starting at the beginning, I think it's sort of hard to envision.
Yeah, I think when children are young, the 2 and 3-year-olds, an hour to an hour and a half is more than enough time. I know that often when I hear of people going on playdates and going to playgroups, they're at 3.5 hours, and it's just too long for kids to really stay social or to stay social well. They tend to fall to pieces after a while. So that hour to an hour and a half is probably plenty for the little ones. As they get to be 4 to 6 years old, likely you could go longer to the 2, 2.5 hour range. I still wouldn't make it an all-day affair or anything that stressful. And I tend to plan it around meal times so that you're not having to serve full lunch during playgroup or a full dinner during playgroup. And that just tends to get in the way a bit. And so planning around those things. I also tend to think it's nice if you're thinking of the schedule for playdates, to think of something weekly. Weekly, the children can remember it from last week. It's still a part of their regular routine. So if you say playgroup is every Wednesday, they know to expect it coming, and it's not such a stretch that they forget who those kids were. Thinking about the time frame as well, and I know this is a little bit separate issue, but mornings tend to be better for a lot of kids than afternoons. Afternoons, they get tired. Afternoons, they get hungry. And so it's thinking maybe mid-morning being the best time.
Which means probably, I guess, you have to have a snack, figuring that into the mix.
Likely snack would do well.
What kinds of interactions should we expect among the children? And should the host child have any special responsibilities or privileges?
Sure. I think what to expect really relies on what age the children are. Around 2 years old, if you start playgroups on the early end, they tend to still be doing parallel play, playing near each other, but maybe not so much with each other. And there still tends to be a lot of play with parents. And that, again, is why I would want a parent to stay per family so that the child feels comfortable. As they get to be 3 and 4 years old, you start to see more interactions between children where they're actually playing together or they're planning together. There's more sequence in their play. There's more negotiation and more imagination in their play. And so the play starts to become much richer. By about 5 years old or 5 and 6 years old, they pretty much don't need the parents anymore at all. They're playing with each other. They're really engaged in play often. They have much longer interactions. They also tend to become more rule-oriented. Rule-oriented play around 5 or 6 years old means they may spend 40 minutes discussing the rules of playing house and then play for 5 minutes. And that's all part of it. If you know that that's what they're supposed to be doing, it's okay that that's how they spend their time. They're learning the language of negotiation and how to schedule around each other. I think about the host child. One may be putting away the things they're not ready to share. I mean, that's a real good job and a real responsibility for that child to have before the party starts, before the playgroup starts. Maybe that child gets to pick or lead an activity. It would give them a little sense of leadership because it's in their own home. They may feel comfortable doing that. Or maybe I tend to also think about contribution. What could this child be doing to help get the house ready? Or what could this child be doing to help get the snack ready? Things that they can be doing in the days or hours before the playgroup, so that they're more a part of the process.
Is it appropriate to ask the host child, what would you like to do when the kids come over? Maybe you can't do it that open-ended. Maybe you could say, would you like to do this, this, or this when the kids come over?
I think it's fine to give them choices, to give them some structure about it, and to let them make some decisions in this because it is at their home. And so having some ownership of the activities at hand would be nice.
How would you advise parents who haven't done this before, who are feeling nervous about dealing with issues of other children?
Sure. That's a hard question because we all talk about the playground politics and what are the lines? Where do you step over into disciplining other people's children? I think you can address part of that just by meeting with the parents ahead of time, by talking with the parents who are going to be at that playgroup about what are our roles, what are our responsibilities. If issues arise, though, during a play date or a playgroup and you're uncomfortable with how to manage, I think parents can always err on the side of speaking for their own children rather than disciplining other people's children. Let's say your daughter just had a toy snatched from her by another little child. Instead of going over to the other child and saying, you shouldn't be doing that, you shouldn't be taking toys, because that's stepping onto the other parent's toes maybe, is saying, wow, she really wasn't finished with her toy. She'd like to finish her turn. You're still just speaking for your own child rather than disciplining the other. Can be a helpful way to go. We talk about when you tell children to use their words. If they're under about 3.5 years old, you want to follow that up with some words to use. And so you say to little Johnny, wow, Johnny, I need you to use your words. Tell him, excuse me. Or I need you to use your words. Tell him, be gentle. You're filling in the words for children under 3.5 because a lot of times when you say use your words, they don't have any. And so it's going ahead and filling that in. As they get to be 4 and 5 years old, I expect them to be able to come up with at least some of that on their own.
And you're, I think, instinctively doing something that we all probably need to remember, and that is when there's an issue, you're not saying don't, you're saying do what you want them to do, not stop doing what you're doing wrong.
Right. How to fix that thing and what the solution is. If you can guide children that way, you tend to gain more compliance.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion with Dr. Renee Hackney.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Renee Hackney about children's playgroups at home. Can we go a little farther and talk a little bit about helping children learn to stand up for themselves?
Definitely. I think about my older daughter, Allison. When she was 2.5, we were in a playgroup program that met weekly. And when someone would take something from her or when someone would bump into her, she would just stand there and cry, or she would come and bury her face in my leg. She didn't have that assertive voice naturally. And so at that little age, when they're very young and don't have any of the language, the first thing I tend to ask that child is, did you like that? Mm-hmm. Because hopefully it turns them around from standing there thinking, oh, poor me, to no, I didn't like that. So hopefully you're spurring them into action. Now, at the littlest ages, for the 2 and 3-year-olds, often the parent is going with and the parent is modeling the language. So I would say, Allison, did you like that? And she'd say, no. And I'd say, okay, I'm going to go with you. And we'd go over to other child and I would say, she really wasn't finished with that toy. She'd like to finish her turn. Hopefully someday Allison will say, I really wasn't finished with that toy. I'd like to finish my turn. So I'm just modeling for her. Now, as she gets more comfortable with going over with me, eventually I want to give her more responsibility. And so I might say, did you like that? No. Okay, I'm going to go with you. Tell them I'm not done. And so I'm hoping that once we get over there, she starts to speak up. But I'm still going for moral support. Now, the first several times we did that, we would get over and she would just shake her head. Not going to say a word. And so I'd still just model for her. But eventually she starts saying some of this and I'm there to help her out. As she gets more comfortable, as she gets that assertive voice, at least with some support, you want to, as a parent, step out a little bit and give them more responsibility. So as she was 4 and 5 years old, somebody would do something. I'd say, did you like that? And she'd say no. And I'd say, okay, I'm going to go with you. What are you going to say? And she starts to provide the language. Or I could say, oh, you didn't like that? Well, I'm going to stay here. Go tell them I'm not done. Either way, I'm spending some time to kind of stepping out of the situation and giving her more responsibility within. By the end, and this is where we are now, she's 10, so this is 8 years later. If something happens, she'll come over to me often and say, Mommy, she took my thing. And I'll say, did you like that? She says, no. And I say, what are you going to say? She says, well, I'm going to go tell them. And I'm like, okay, go. And then she goes. So she's really doing it more on her own. And I expect that when she's at school, she's managing more of it on her own. But she's still using me to bounce off of. And that's completely fine. It's just the support, the level of support that's needed.
It must be very challenging for the parent of the host child to have to deal with one of the other children and say to the other child, you go tell the host child that you didn't like that.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it because the lines get so crossed. Mm-hmm. And you're there more as the host, almost equally to being the parent, and mm-hmm. you want all things equal.
When children are battling it out and you are the host mom, let's say, how do you know what to do?
There is a fine line between when do you intervene and when do you help them problem solve versus when do you let them problem solve on their own. And I tend to say if they're having success, if young children are working it out and they're having success, by all means, it's fine to let them go. When it turns the corner and they are unsuccessful, they're starting to get upset with each other, they're starting to get angry with each other, that at least deserves some words of encouragement or some redirection. So the parents stepping in and giving some maybe suggestions for how to solve. Once those children, though, are past about the 3.5 to 4-year mark, I want parents giving suggestions but not solving for children. Younger children, the 2s and 3s, parents are solving for them. They're coming in, they're saying, wow, Johnny, you need to take a turn and then you can have it next. As they get to be 4 and 5 years old, the parent might give some suggestions, the parent might give some hints, but I want the children to actually find the solution on their own. And those solutions can be a little crazy. In our house, I remember Allison saying, okay, Claire, you do 3 cartwheels while I, and I was like, what? Does that have to do with anything? But no matter how they get there, as long as they're socially problem solving, once they find some solutions, the less they're going to need you the next go around. They're actually practicing the problem solving skills. We do get a lot of parents who say, as the 2-year-olds are starting to hurt each other, no, 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 they need to learn to work it out. At that point, those children are just practicing the negative ways to solve. They're not doing well. And so I think they still deserve that intervention when they're young.
Which means parents have to be alert and be around.
Be alert and be around and be actively supervising.
Well, unfortunately, we have to come to a close at this point, but we have had an awful lot of active, important information. What resources would you suggest for our listeners who would like to further pursue some of these issues and learn a little bit more?
One good book is The Playgroup Handbook by Broad, B-R-O-A-D. Another is The Stay-at-Home Mom's Complete Guide to Playgroups by Joy, which is J-O-Y-E. There's a third called Playgroups, A Complete Guide for Parents. That's by Levine and Sheila, which is L-E-V-I-N-E-S-H-E-I-L-A. are three good books that really lay out the foundations for managing playgroups and having playgroups in your home. There are also several good websites and organizations. The International Moms Club has affiliate groups all over the country, and they are at momsclub.org. It's really strongly encouraged for parents to go to momsclub.org and create a playgroup in your neighborhood. The International Moms Clubs, they tend to encourage families to get together for playgroups, for speakers, for all kinds of family interactions, moms' nights out. It's a really big organization. There's playgroupsusa.com, which if you go to start, it's kind of a listserv for different areas. And so if you go in and you register, I live in Alexandria, Virginia, they will allow other people who are on that site to match up by age and by interest or by neighborhood even to get some playgroups going. There is another website called myplaygroups.com. It provides more information about how to organize, how to plan, how to manage playgroup times.
It sounds like a lot of good resources. Let me ask you an obvious question, and that is, are dads included in these things, or are there separate ones for dads?
Definitely. Fathers are welcome in many of these groups. Momsclub.org encourages fathers to also be involved. And these days, there are more and more stay-at-home dads. I know if you go online and just Google fathers at home or dads at home, you might come up with lots of groups in your own area that are dad organizations.
Well, you have given us an awful lot of information and expertise, and all the parents out there who are worried about how they can do it now have some ammunition to do it right. So, Renee Hackney, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to understand about forming playgroups at home.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 371 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.